Accession number 10428, Reel 4.
Mr. Economides, Reel 4. Were these advancing enemy Moors, or foreign legion, or Spaniards, or what? Could you see?
What I could see, I would say they were Spaniards.
That other incident where Fred Copeman said that you had to be put under arrest, why do you think he reacted in that way?
I think it was a bunch of nerves. He was a small-time bully, in my opinion. And it was confirmed later on when he was left there. I'll come to it later.
So you said that you were in hospital at Castellón de la Plana. What kind of treatment did you get there?
Well, it was a civil hospital there, the civic hospital. It was very good. I don't think I was a very serious case, a question of, taking its course. They gave me a tetanus injection or what they do. And I was there for a week. And after that, they sent me to Benicassim. It is a village or a summer resort, some 12 miles, I think, north of Castellón.
For recuperation?
Yes. And there, in this place, they had, I think it's a summer resort, they had nice villas, nice detached houses, and each battalion had a Villa Dombrovski for the Poles. Our villa for the English was called Rap Fox. André Marty for the French, or something like that. And I went to the Villa Fox. It's very nice there. We had very good food in a place called Miramar. I think it was like a restaurant on a pier, or and they had some very good food there.
Do you remember who was with you there?
I remember Dunbar was there.
Who?
Malcolm Dunbar, who was Malcolm the observer Dunbar. Of the battalion. His name is there. He was prominent. He served in Spain with distinction. Malcolm Dunbar was there. And I remember another American was there. This is interesting, this American. I forget his name, but I got his photograph somewhere. This fellow had one leg, and I heard him in the evening shout to the nurse. Milagro was the name of the nurse. He said to her, "Donde está mi pierna?" I thought he was joking. "Where is my leg?" he said to her. That's American humor, I thought. The next thing, and in the evening, I see him dancing in the village hall, or what you call it, the entertainment place we had, Casa del Pueblo. He was dancing with a nurse, a girl nurse. He was hit on the thigh. A bullet went through the support of his artificial leg, and of course he had to go to hospital, and he had to take his leg off to treat the wound. And he put it on, and he went dancing in the evening. He went to Spain with one leg only. He came from New York, and I understand he lost his leg and ran over by the railway wheel, ran over, and he cut off his leg. They made him an artificial one, and it was very good for him. He went back, and he was driving a lorry this time, a shrapnel cut off the artificial leg completely. So he had to go back. He had no... He went back to the States. But Malcolm Dunbar told me, he after the withdrawal of the battalion, Malcolm Dunbar went back as a correspondent, one of the papers. And he was in, after Casado capitulated, you know, handed over Madrid to Franco, he was this young chap with the one leg. He was working as a wireless operator on a cargo boat, which was in Valencia at the time, and he helped take away about 8 or 10 people.
So, how long were you recuperating?
I was there for, then February, a couple of months, I think, March and April. In May, I went back to, in fact, my book will tell. Was in Benicassim until June.
You just got that from your book, yes. From your logbook.
Yes. I went to Albacete to report to join the battalion. And then they sent me, the political commission there, they sent me to Pozo Rubio, which was a school for officers, where they trained officers, in a place called Pozo Rubio, which was outside Albacete. In charge of that school, it was Tom Wintringham, and he was assisted by Lieutenant Oloronshaw. Yes. There in the middle of June, July, August.
So you had been selected to become an officer?
Yes. And I was in Pozo Rubio at the officer school for about 6 to 7 weeks.
Who was training you?
Tom Wintringham.
Did you get good training?
Well, it was really very general, you know.
Who else was on the course with you?
Oh, there were all sorts from the States, from practically every state in the USA, and some Canadians. And, of course, English or British. There were about 50 of us, I think, altogether. 50. It was general sort of lectures, and we were taught to dismantle and assemble the machine gun. General instruction on these matters. When I was in Pozo Rubio, I was asked to go to Tarazona de la Mancha, which was the place where the British were in training. I was asked to be the political representative of the British in training, at the training base.
Political commissar?
Yes.
What rank did you hold?
Captain.
What did your job as political commissar entail?
Was look after the morale, you know, where they had difficulties. It was also like a welfare officer, if you know what I mean. You know, the difficulties of people to overcome their own personal difficulties. And the political instruction, you know, the importance of what we were doing. And we had meetings with the others and discussed our problems and how best we could overcome them.
What were your main difficulties in acting as political commissioner?
Well, we had at the beginning of the, you know, of the recruitment, I told you we have tried to go to Spain at the beginning of November, but I was not endorsed because of the lack of military experience. There was too much stress on military experience, but some of these old soldiers that were recruited, when it came to the point of fighting, they tried to get out of it, and they didn't have their heart in the fighting, and they created problems. And by then, after the Battle of Jarama especially, and the aftermath of it, because it, what followed Jarama was the equivalent of trench warfare. They went into those trenches and they stayed there, you know, and the boredom and everything. The old soldiers, they proved a problem. And they had a demoralizing influence on the others. And we had to eliminate them by send them back home, you know, because they were, some of them were too much of a burden, or put them in jobs where they could do something useful. And it was a transitional period. When I first went to Tarazona, things were really pretty bad. You know, there was no discipline at all. The morale was low. But a good help. I singled out John Angus, George Fletcher from Manchester, some of the other comrades. But anyway, the thing was sorted out.
Why do you single those two out?
Because they were exceptional in their help. They were very competent, very devoted to the job. There were others, some being unkind or unfair, not to mention more names, but they don't come to mind easily. And also, of course, I think the greatest credit of all must go to the commander of the base, a retired Marine commander, Major Johnson. He was in the American Marines, and he really put the base under military discipline. He built his little jail, you know, and he had military police to enforce the rules, and any violations of discipline were corrected. You know, up to then, we were practically almost entirely relying on self-discipline. But in an army, self-discipline is not alone, is not enough. I mean, self-discipline alone is not enough. And I think Major Johnson must take the greatest credit for establishing military discipline in the base. The political people played their part, but Major Johnson, I think, must take the greatest credit. In the end, he became really a very impressive military base that would do credit to any army. Tarazona was good. the difficulty was only for about two to three weeks. But afterwards, it was all right. It was functioning as it should function, as a proper training center.
Were those 2 or 3 weeks in the summer or the autumn?
Summer. It was August, and September. August and beginning of September, by the middle of September, the problems were sorted out completely.
So when people were told to go home, did they accept that?
Of course, they accept that, and some of them, they wanted it.
There
are not many. It didn't involve many. But those that were no good, they had nothing to offer, they were no place, and they were sent home. But, of course, by then, the measures were taken on the recruitment site not to, you know, people were checked before they left, and we didn't have that, or not to that extent anyway. Well, I was there until November, then November, and the job was done. There was no problem anymore. The base was functioning well, and I asked to join the front, you know, to go back to the battalion. But as I was in Spain already for a year, I was entitled to a month's holiday. I could come to London or have my holiday in Spain. I thought London, you know, I fancy London in December. And it would have meant addressing meetings of a dozen people, you know, trade union branches and things. And I thought I'd better stay in Spain, so I stayed in Spain for the December. I had my holiday.
Whereabouts?
In Alicante, Denia, and Valencia. And I had a damn good time. You know.
Who were you with at that time?
Well, I was on my own. I went on holiday. You know, I spoke Spanish well by then. You know, I was quite at home. And
then after your holiday?
After the holidays, I reported back to Albacete. And they sent me to Figueras instead. That is the delegation of the international brigades on the border. And I was responsible for the reception of the English and Spanish-speaking volunteers who were coming over the Pyrenees.
And what were you supposed to do with them?
Well, the headquarters were in the castle of Figueras. I don't know if you know, it's a very big castle, two very big castles in Spain on the border. They were since the days of the Napoleonic Wars, one in Pamplona and one in Figueras. And the delegations were there. There were others from other, you know, a Pole, a Frenchman, a German, and an Italian, and myself. And they were coming over the Pyrenees on foot, the volunteers. And our job was to welcome them after their journey and take particulars. You know, they had to fill up a questionnaire, take particulars, and tell them of what to expect. Tell them that, you know, remind them that, you know, the war was at a critical stage and that things wouldn't be easy. And if they felt they couldn't put up with the difficulties, I had the authority on the part of the government to send them back if they change their mind.
Did you send many back?
Not many, about 8.
Out of
perhaps 10. I really don't know. I was there for about 3 months, 3-4 months, 1,000, maybe 800, 700. It's very difficult to tell. You know, we had bunches sometimes of 50 or 40, 50, and then very few, 10. And this over 3 months, I cannot tell. But anybody that didn't feel like it or whom I did not consider would, with my experience in Tarazona, you know, came very handy. And I think in retrospect, perhaps it is one of the jobs I did best in Figueras.
What kind of signs would you look for?
Well, they filled up a questionnaire and we had a chat. And, well, if their heart was not in it or they didn't mean to. I remember an instance in particular, which is, I knew, you know, they were not interested. And when they saw that it was, they would have to face military discipline and do their job, they had their warning, themselves changed their minds, you know.
But, so what was the incident?
Yes. There was a chap by the name of, he came to me and he said, I'm a pacifist. I cannot bear arms. I said, what do you got to hear then? You know there is a war going on here. And we fight that war with arms, with rifles and whatever. And what do you do here? He said, I want to help. I realized that this is, unless we stopped fascism in Spain, they will go on from there. And I want to stop the spread of the war. And then how can you do it, I say, if you are not prepared to fight? Well, I could be in first aid or drive an ambulance or a truck, but I cannot kill another human being. I thought to myself, you better go back. But in the evening he came back to see me again and said, I really, you know, I want to stay. I want to play my part. And then I gave it a good deal of thought. And then I thought, but that is what we're here ourselves doing, you know, trying to stop the spread of the war. And this man being a pacifist and overcoming his pacifism and coming here, it took a lot of courage. He's a decent human being and a brave man. He will have his place in the battalion, you know, in the army, as first aid or whatever. And I changed my mind. I told him he can go.
Which country did he come from?
He came from London. His name was then Stanley Harrison. But a couple of years ago, he rang me up. He became Stanley Brennan, and he lived here in
Twickenham?
No, beyond, in near Saddle. The other side of Ealing. And he suffered from Parkinson's disease in a very advanced stage. He wanted to meet me, and he spoke to Bill Alexander, who told him, he's a neighbor of yours, Michael lives in Twickenham, and he rang me up, and the same evening he came over with his wife, and it was in the summer, we had a meal on the lawn, and I was very pleased to see him. And by the way, he joined the battalion, and soon afterwards, I too joined the battalion because I was not in Figueras for a very long time. And when I was wounded at Corpera, in the Ebro, he dressed my wound. He was in my company as a stretcher bearer with the in the Ebro offensive, and he did serve throughout the war, and his job in very many respects was much more difficult than the soldiers. Well, I was in Figueras until April, and then I joined the battalion. There was very few coming, very few were coming in. The communications with these south were cut off at Tortosa, and there were very few volunteers coming. The castle, the brigades were moved from the delegation was moved from the castle of Figueras, and ourselves went to a little place called Fortianel. It was an abbey outside Figueras, a little place called Fortianel, but there were very few volunteers coming in, and of course I didn't want to stay any longer. I asked to be transferred to the battalion, and they sent Lieutenant Olorenshaw. He took over for me. I handed over to Olorenshaw, and I joined the battalion. We went to behind Reus on the mountains and tried to rebuild the battalion. By then there were not many coming in, and the battalion suffered a lot of losses, and the same applied to the rest of the international brigades. They were mixed with the Spaniards. I was the commissar of the 4th company of the battalion.
Where?
In the Ebro offensive, you know, when we joined, I say, when I joined the battalion in April, end of April, beginning of May, end of April, beginning of May, it was again disorganized. And there, you know, people like me from hospital and others from hospitals, or a few new volunteers, with the inclusion of Spaniards, tried to rebuild the battalion into full strength. And that was done. And the battalion was training on the mountains behind Reus.